Buckeye Extra is brought to you by the Columbus Springs Hospitals, changing people's lives by providing addiction and mental health treatment for adults, adolescents, and children through two Columbus-based hospitals and an outpatient service clinic. Columbus Springs Hospitals. There's hope. There's help. For full information, visit hopeincolumbus.com.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. It's my official duty to welcome you into the 31st episode of the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. I'm coming to you live late Wednesday evening from my living room, sitting in my chair. Both kids are asleep. We had some interviews today, so wanted to get a podcast out there before too much time had passed. Kind of look back on the two men's basketball interview sessions we've had since the last podcast. So before we dive into that, I want to say thanks to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With two hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit ColumbusSprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. Before we dive in, as always, I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes for searching for Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. That way you won't miss anything, and it's Buckeye Extra with a capital X. We're not really sticking to a specific schedule, although the plan is one a week, even through the off season here. And if you want to make sure you don't miss anything and have them just pop right up on your phone, the easiest way to do that is to subscribe. You can find us on Google Play as well, which I know I've had some emails about. That should make it even easier for you to hear me ramble about the Ohio State men's basketball team. As always, if you could leave a few comments, maybe some positive reviews, my bosses check that stuff, and I like my job and I like keeping it. So anything that you can do to help me make sure that I can keep doing something I enjoy and putting food on the table for the two kids that are upstairs asleep right now is always greatly appreciated. So first thing to get into here is, since we recorded the last podcast, we've actually had interviews with two members of the men's basketball team. Last Wednesday afternoon, we got to speak with Micah Potter. And then earlier today, we had an interview with CJ Jackson. And these are just sort of general summer kind of catch-up interviews where it's very informal. There's no like one specific topic to go over. And so it's kind of a hodgepodge. You just kind of throw a couple of things out there and just get a feel for maybe where guys are. It's tough because without getting to see individual workouts or without getting to really see much of anything this time of year, and with players kind of coming and going until everyone gets on campus as of this weekend, there's not anything super concrete to ask about. So you kind of get into some things that are, I don't know if you want to say off topic, but just maybe more nebulous questions or bigger picture types of things, maybe some reflections on the past year. And so that was a big sort of talking point with Micah Potter, in that last year was a tough season for him. And when you think back to how he maybe started the season and then suffering the high ankle sprain and just really struggling to ever really get back into a consistent flow, consistent rhythm, it was a tough year for him. And so the main overarching question that I think was asked in a number of different ways was just, how are you hoping to be the consistent player that Ohio State needs you to be? And there's no real good answer to that other than just to start producing consistently. I think that Micah is a player who has so many leadership capabilities and qualities, and I don't think he's afraid of taking on some responsibilities like that. But I think in order for him to effectively do that, he needs to produce more consistently. And so I think he's aware of that as well. I think that that's something that it's not really going to change until he just goes out on the court and starts doing it. And so one of the things we talked about early on, he had taken a mission trip through Ohio State with a number of other student athletes. And he talked about how that trip gave him perspective. It's very similar to two summers ago, Kata Bates-Diop took a mission trip and came away from that noticeably different. That was one thing that Thad Matta talked about a lot with Kata, was that trip significantly impacted who Kata was as a person. And that eventually helped translate to making him a more polished basketball player, a better composed basketball player, maybe. And so Micah talked about some of those similar situations and seeing, you know, getting a greater appreciation for all the things that he has, giving him some better perspective on life. And he talked about how, you know, it makes him want to take advantage of all the opportunities that he has, how he has amazing facilities that are open to him, and he can be playing basketball and working out whenever he wants, you know, 24/7, basically. So he said, you know, I've got all these opportunities. And so I asked, do you feel you've taken advantage of your opportunities here? And he said, there's always room to grow. I've definitely had my fair share of late nights here and early mornings getting extra work in, but there's always room for improvement and finding little windows throughout my day to make sure that I'm working on my game where I need to be. So he understands that his role was inconsistent last year. He talked about it being a teaching point, and it was a good life lesson for him. He said, you know, life's not always going to give you everything you want. That's not how God created life on this earth. It's something you've got to be patient and trust him with everything and work hard to get back to where you were. I think that he understands that the season didn't go the way that he wanted it to. I think there were some hard moments for him, but I think if you sit down and you look at the film from, you know, the last several games of the season, going into and including the tournament, you know, they put him in for a couple of minutes to maybe give Caleb Weston a breather, or to give Kata a breather, and he might have a spurt where maybe he'd have a tip dunk or maybe hit a three or something, but then he's getting beat for an offensive rebound or committing a bad foul, and he would come out of the game. And I know that can be very frustrating, but I think that the tape would show you that the consistent production just wasn't there last year. And I think that Micah is aware of that, and I think that's something that he's working on. I thought it was interesting, one of the ongoing questions with Micah is whether or not he can play the four, and he wants to play the four, and he thinks that he can. He thinks it's something that he can prove to this coaching staff, that he can play more on the perimeter, and you could have him in the lineup with Caleb Weston, and that both of those guys can complement each other instead of just replacing each other. And one of the things that I think will be very interesting is whether or not he can develop maybe the foot speed or the agility, the quickness, all the things that you need to be able to play more on the perimeter to be able to guard some of those guys that I just, right now, it's really hard for me to project Micah being in some of those situations. So I, as it stands right now, and I would happily be wrong, but I have some significant doubts about whether Micah is quick enough or can get to a position where we could see Micah Potter at the four and Caleb Weston at the five. I think that a lineup like that puts Ohio State in so many disadvantages on the defensive end. Now, if he can improve his ball screen defense, hit the three-pointer more consistently, then maybe you can argue that the offensive gains might offset the defensive struggles, but I think it will take a lot to get to that point. And I feel like Ohio State does have options when you start looking at who else could play the four, whether it's Jaden Lede, whether it's Kyle Young. I don't know that Micah Potter would be at the top of that depth chart, but that's what you've got a summer for. You know, those are things that he's working on. He talked about trying to build up his core strength and get stronger so he can bang in the paint better. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to see on that one. But as it stands right now, I still think he's likely ticketed to be Caleb's backup at the five, and he's going to have to convince them otherwise. So when we got to CJ Jackson today, so many of the questions to me just revolved around how comfortable are you being the leader for this team? Because he is the player on this roster who's played the most games. He has 66 games under his belt, but he only has two seasons in the program. The longest tenured player on the roster is walk-on Joey Lane. But CJ is the guy that they're going to have to look to in a lot of different ways. And it's been very interesting to watch CJ sort of develop and grow from a guy who was supposed to come in and just give Jaquan Lyle a break here and there to a guy that outplayed him for a starting spot and really blossomed last year. He had some ups and some downs, but I'm not sure that I saw him being a guy who was going to average 12 and a half a game in the Big Ten, and that's what he did. He doubled his scoring average. All of his numbers from his first season were up significantly, and the way he closed the season in the NCAA tournament, he averaged 19 points in those two games. Was really aggressive. His shot was falling. Just looked like a player who was ready to sort of take that next step. They need him to do that and to continue to do that, because there's just so many questions about this team. There's so much from a leadership standpoint that we just don't know about yet. And so it was very interesting to me that as CJ sat down, We were informed that he took part in an Athletes in Action leadership session. And what's interesting to me about that is that a story that I was working on 2 years ago but never got around to was that both Kata Bates-Diop and Jayshon Tate went to that exact same Athletes in Action leadership session as well, something that Thad Mata and his staff had set up. And they weren't able to reap the benefits of that, obviously, but that was something that gave a very clear indication that that coaching staff viewed those guys as the leaders of the team. And they were giving them another opportunity to acquire tools to be those guys. Chris Holtman's staff ultimately reaped the benefits of that. Not to say that they wouldn't have proven to be leaders otherwise, but that certainly helped them. And so it's interesting to me that this year, Chris Holtman and his staff sent C.J. Jackson. And he said they sent him because they want him to take away leadership things. They want him to come out of his shell a little bit more and to be more willing to be a vocal guy and to be a leader on the court who guys are going to follow. And in the course of the conversation, I asked C.J., like, do you view this as your team? And he said, yes. And then he also said, you know, but it's also everybody's team. And he said, like, by way of example, he said he's really taken Kyle Young under his wing. And he's really sort of tried to help him deal with some of the ups and the downs of just kind of trying to find your way in college. He said, I said, well, like, why Kyle? Like, why do that? And he said, I just don't think he understands what he can bring to the table. I don't think he understands how good he is sometimes. So guys like that, you want to be a bug in their ear and keep telling them, just keep coming, just keep coming. In those days where it's hard or he doesn't feel like it, those are the days where you really push him. If you do it consistently, he'll trust you. And I felt like that was a moment, and that was an answer that's not just... That's not just lip service. That's not just saying, yeah, I'm a leader. Yeah, I want to be a leader. Yeah, I want to lead this team. I mean, I hate those kinds of questions in general because it's such an easy thing to – it's a lazy question, I feel like, most of the time because you try to define what a leader is, and it varies from team to team and guy to guy, and it's – I don't know. I feel like there's so many times where it's just like, oh, who's going to be the leader on this team? And that's a boring question. Like, have something more behind it. But in this case, I felt like CJ really offered some insight into how he is actually trying to take some ownership of this team. I asked him if any players had done things like that for him when he had gotten to Ohio State. And he said Jayshon Tate. He said, Jayshon telling me, keep coming, keep it going. There's no point in stopping now. You worked all this time to get where you're at, so you might as well get the most you can out of it. When I talked to CJ in the locker room at Taco Bell Arena in Boise, Idaho, after the season ended, he said that he had a very keen appreciation for the fact that the time was running out for him, that you know those seniors on that team last year meant a lot to him, and that now it was his turn to be the senior, and that was already weighing on him then. He said that continues to be the case. Like he had one of the things he talked about today was that you know, those guys did such a great job of leaving Ohio State in a good position, and he wants to make sure that he does the same. He recognizes that he can't have bad days. You know, this is his last time for everything, and even if he feels like he might not be super excited about this particular day or maybe this particular practice, he has to be because this is it. And I don't think that that's just lip service. I mean, CJ's never necessarily been a very talkative interview, but I think that there's some realness to what he said today. And I believe from talking to him that he is understanding how important some of this is for this team and how he's going to have to really, this team in a lot of ways is going to go where he can take them. I do think it's interesting too. We asked both CJ and Micah about Keyshawn Woods, and both of them have raved about Keyshawn. When we asked CJ about him today, and it turns out that he knows Keyshawn. They're both from a similar area. They played against each other apparently in high school. CJ said like four or five times they played against each other, and both CJ and Micah had sort of similar comments to say about him. But like CJ today said, you know, he just knows how to play. If a guy hits two in a row, it's not my turn to take a shot. Look for your teammate. Things like that. It's really small and minor, but it goes a long way as far as chemistry and bond, especially when you're playing in a hostile environment on the road. That instills trust, and you've got to have that. That's sort of along the lines with what Micah said. Now, they've only basically just had open gyms and stuff to this point, so there's not... It's not like we're talking about like specific drills or specific workouts, like team workouts or things like that. But Micah said, Keyshawn does everything right. He can have a contested shot, but he'll make the extra pass. He can drive the lane, and it could be help side defense coming over. He'll get the ball out. I don't know if I've ever played with a guy who's that unselfish. If it's an open shot, he's going to take it. But at the same time, sometimes I don't even expect the ball because it's a good shot, but then he gives it to me and it's a better shot. His unselfishness and want to make the right play is just something that's going to help our team out a lot. Him being able to play multiple positions and handle the ball and shoot the ball and get to the cup, everything he does is fluid. So the more I think about it, I do expect CJ to at least match his production from last year, because he's not going to be trying to feed the Big Ten player of the year or a first or second team all Big Ten player and Jayshon Tate. He's going to have to look to get his a little bit more. And I think we saw last year that when he was on the court with Andrew Dokic and they could sort of share those point guard responsibilities, that he really flourished in those situations. I think that will continue, because I think you're going to see CJ and Keyshawn on the court at the same time. I feel like at this point, at least a fair amount. And Keyshawn's a guy that, he scored at a high level at a high level. I mean, this is a guy that has been playing in the ACC. This is a guy who is not going to be afraid to go into the Breslin Center or Mackey Arena and get the job done. He's played in Cameron Indoor and he's played in the Dean Dome, and he's seen those kinds of environments. And it sounds like he's making himself very well liked already to his new team. So I think those guys, if they can both average 15 a game, that might not be out of the realm of possibilities. And if that happens, you see Caleb Wesson developing down low. I think he could be a 10-10 type of guy. Then you start adding in some pieces, and it all adds to what could be a pretty solid roster. I keep coming back to the fact that, not to get off on a tangent, but I don't think there's anybody on this team that, if they reach their ceiling this season, will be Big Ten Player of the Year. And so to me, as I start thinking big picture and as I start thinking about where I think this team could be, I think this team will probably continue to improve, and they could be really good by the time March comes around. I struggle to be able to picture them near the top of the Big Ten, because I don't know that the elite capability is there just yet. I think it will be a tough team and a solid team, but I don't see an all Big Ten player, or I shouldn't say that. I don't see a Big Ten Player of the Year on this roster. So, there's more time to dive into things like that going forward. But sometimes we get off on tangents on here. When I talk to myself, it's very difficult to keep myself on track. So, last week I also had the opportunity. Ohio State hosted its team camp at Value City Arena Thursday and Friday. Hopefully you were checking the coverage we had on dispatch.com. Wrote four or five different stories, caught up with a couple of recruits and some coaches, and had a chance to just get to see a couple of guys that Ohio State is recruiting. Like, for example, I was really excited to see Zach Loveday, who's a 7-foot center in the, well, I guess 7-foot center is kind of redundant, right? He's 7 foot. He plays center. He plays for Gallia Academy in Gallipolis. I don't know how to say that city. I called it Gallipolis on the radio today, and Bobby Carpenter called me out. Gallipolis. I apologize. I will work on that. This is why I prefer writing to talking, because I can spell it. I just can't quite say it right. But at any rate, he's a 7-foot center in the class of 2020. He's the top recruit in Ohio for that class. Ohio State offered him a little while back. Back in the fall, definitely a high priority for them. And what's interesting to me about him is that for a 7-footer, he is very fluid. He is bouncy. He's agile. I feel like when you see guys of that size, a lot of times they're very stiff. But if anything, I'm not going to compare him to Kevin Durant, but I'm not going to say that they're completely different from each other in that. I mean, Zach looks very comfortable shooting from the perimeter. I saw him knock down a number of threes. You know, he obviously needs to get stronger and more physical. He doesn't go up against guys his size ever. When I talked to his high school coach, he said that the biggest player in Central Ohio or Southeast Ohio, aside from Zach, is like 6'4". So you don't get a lot of opportunities as a 7-footer to really work on your craft at the high school level, but it should be a pretty decent AAU summer for him. He plays for a team from Louisville. There's a connection there with a trainer of his who I believe used to play for Louisville. Louisville has not offered, and I think the coaching, going through the coaching transition that they did, I think that probably played a role in it. But I would imagine that's a school that if they show more interest could be in play for Zach. Not in any real hurry to make a decision or anything like that, but a very interesting interview. One of the things that I really appreciated, and we talked about this, and it didn't make the article, but as time goes on, especially if he does end up committing to Ohio State, I will definitely write a story on this, but he plays in the marching band. He's a 7-foot trombone player, and as a former basketball player slash trumpet player in the marching band, jazz band, concert band, I have a real appreciation for that. And he talked about how it's important for him to be able to have like an outlet, something else that's not just 100% basketball. And that's not to say that he's not focused on basketball and not focused on the right things. I mean, the game obviously means a lot to him. And he talked to me about not necessarily wanting to be a one and done or a two and done player, that he doesn't want to go to the NBA until he knows that he's ready. And he wants to make sure that he's, you know, set from an academic standpoint, and just a very, very well thought, he's put a lot of thought into who he wants to be and what he wants to be. And part of that is that if he wants to go out and be in the marching band, he's going to do that. And so I give him a lot of credit for that, because I don't think you see a lot of kids that are highly recruited who would find time to, you know, for an extracurricular like that. I also can't imagine how hard it is for a 7-footer to stay on step. I had enough trouble with that, as my bandmates would attest. So so good on him. I think that's pretty cool. I got to watch Zeb Jackson, who's the 2020 point guard prospect from Maumee Valley Country Day School in Northwest Ohio, which also hails, Maumee Valley plays in the Toledo Area Athletic Conference, which is the conference of my alma mater, Northwood High School. I have played at Maumee Valley, although I guess when you get subbed in with like a tenth of a second left, I don't know if that technically counts as, I mean, I was in the game for a guy to miss a free throw and then the game ended. But I technically was on the court for a game at Maumee Valley. And it blows my mind that it's a very small school. There's not a lot. They're not known for producing elite basketball talent, but they have Zeb Jackson, who has been in that school district since he was in like third grade or something like that, and went there for the academics. It is a very solid academic school. When I talked to his high school coach, he pointed out that a lot of kids in Zeb's position would have gone to St. John's. They would have gone to St. Francis, some of the Catholic powerhouses in the area. But Zeb felt like this was the best fit for him and his academics, and his parents have put him on sort of an accelerated academic program. And so he's at Maumee Valley Country Day School, and he looked good. I didn't quite know what I would see from him, but I mean, he's a lefty. He looks very comfortable going through traffic. I was impressed with his jumper at times. He likes it a bit much. And, you know, when you're watching these team camps, I mean, some of these teams haven't played together much in a while, or I guess all of them probably haven't played much together in a while. And so it's kind of a mixed bag. You don't want to draw any major conclusions from things. But when he was on the court, it was clear early on that he was the most talented player on the court. He just is very, very silky with the ball in his hands, very smooth, you know, has some room to grow from a defensive standpoint. And I don't want to call anybody out on effort at a team camp when you're playing, you know, 3 40-minute games a day in the middle of June. So I'm certainly not going to call anybody out on that. His coaches had some things to say about like trying to get him to play with a little more aggression, but another very well-spoken kid. Had a very nice interview with him after he got done playing, and the Ohio State coaches were definitely visible throughout this camp, watching both those guys. They've let them know that they're very interested in both of them. Dom Penn from Dublin Kaufman was not at the camp, even though Kaufman was. He was playing in the Nike Elite 100 camp in St. Louis, where he did land a scholarship offer from St. Louis. That brings him up to 5. He has Ohio State, Duquesne, Stony Brook, Kent State, and now St. Louis. I caught up with him after the camp, and he said it was a great experience. Felt like he really was able to show his, you know, his skills and to prove that he's an elite player. He is the only other player currently ranked from Ohio in the 24/7 rankings for the class of 2020. He's listed as the number 2 recruit in Ohio, just behind Zach Loveday. Some recruiting rankings I feel like might have Zeb ahead of Dom. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out going forward. I don't expect Ohio State to take two point guards in the class of 2020. So I do think it might be a one or the other type of situation. And obviously, Dom has the family ties to the program with his dad being Scooney and being on the coaching staff, although he's not a full-time coach. There's a lot to unpack there, and I'm very curious to see how that all plays out. I also got to see Jeremiah Francis, who is a local kid coming off of knee surgery last year that basically robbed him of his entire season. And Pickerington Central still made it to the state Final Four, and that program has just become such a powerhouse. They're so much fun to watch. They've just got a lot of talent. They a lot of size, a lot of athleticism. But Jeremiah is as you might expect from a guy who had he's only been cleared 2 or 3 weeks earlier to actually start playing full contact basketball, and he looked it. You could occasionally see the flash here and there where you can tell that this is a guy who knows how to play the game, but he looked overweight, he looked slow, he looked like he was getting his wind back. I don't fault him for any of that, because when you've had this knee surgery, I believe in December, and so we're talking roughly 6 months of not really playing almost at all. So it's going to take some time. It'll be an interesting summer for him. He's got to get himself into, I would think, some pretty good shape before he can really start showing some things on the AAU circuit. But he did say North Carolina has not wavered in its recruitment of him, and they've been very supportive as he's dealt with the injury and his rehab. And so very interested to see what sort of season he can put together this fall. But just good to see him out on the court. I spoke with him a handful of times leading into his commitment to North Carolina, and just a kid that's a very polite, well-spoken kid. And you hate to see anybody of that caliber suffer an injury, especially on a team that ends up making the state Final Four. And you just wonder, like, what could that team have done if they would have had him? So good to see him back on the court. Hope he remains healthy, has a great season this year. Did also get to run into EJ Liddell, a four-star small forward prospect who was actually just on campus for an unofficial visit. And I managed to catch him in the parking lot as he was heading home for a six-hour drive. And he really enjoyed his visit to Ohio State. One of the things that I thought was pretty neat was that the coaching staff took him to the library, and not the library that I frequented on North High Street that might serve the occasional alcoholic beverage, but the actual main library, which is gorgeous if you've never been. And they took him to the top floor and just basically showed him how big it is there. I mean, that you can see all of campus from up there. It's a gorgeous view. You can see downtown, you can see all over the place, and just really sort of impressed to him like what sort of impact you can have at a university like that. And so he talked to me about he could be a one and done, two and done type of player, but that he really enjoyed his visit. He thought that it was the coaching staff clearly has made him somewhat of a priority. They do have the commitment from Alonzo Gaffney from Garfield Heights, who's Ohio's top recruit in the class of 2019. They would gladly take a commitment from EJ Liddell. I think both those guys could complement each other. One maybe playing on the block, the other one playing more on the wing, but two athletic, really talented guys. And I mean, sometimes you can just tell that a guy's athletic from talking to him in a parking lot. And you look at EJ Liddell, you look at his highlight clips, you talk to him, he's a big dude. He's got a lot working for him. Ohio State would love to land a guy like that in the class of 2019. I don't necessarily get the sense that they're particularly close to landing anybody in that class just yet. I know they would like to. It'll be an interesting July. Maybe some things shake out that way, and they have at least one more commitment before that period is up, or maybe shortly thereafter. But still working on that. A few scheduling notes, just as some of the players that I mentioned. But I've heard that that Zach Loveday's team will play Garfield Heights, which is Alonzo Gaffney's team, at some point this season. I don't know when or where, but that's definitely, that will be something to keep an eye on. Alonzo Gaffney playing against the 7-footer Zach Loveday. And also, if you want to see Garfield Heights and you live in Central Ohio, I saw on Twitter that Garfield Heights will play Pickerington Central in Columbus on January 26th as part of the Jared Sullinger Classic, I believe it's called. But something to put on the calendar. Unless Ohio State is playing that day, you will certainly see me there, because that would be one heck of a matchup. Two other things I want to mention before I get out of here. I can't believe I've been talking for quite this long, but Jayshon Tate has landed a couple of workouts, and I'm really excited for Jayshon because I think anybody who's been around the program for a few years, anybody who's been around would tell you that they want to see that guy do well. I mean, he's been a joy to cover, and I'm greatly going to miss watching him play every day next year, but he has had some NBA workouts with the Pacers, the Bulls, and the Jazz. So I think that just tells you that he's putting himself in a position. I still think it's an incredible long shot to think that he might get drafted. After all, if I remember right, David Leite didn't get drafted. So I'm not sure that Jayshon will hear his name called when the draft happens, but he could be a guy that finds himself a spot on an NBA summer camp roster. Maybe he ends up with a G League contract. But I think he's putting himself in a position to take advantage of some opportunities, and that stuff that doesn't just happen by accident. So congratulations to Jayshon. I hope it pays off for him. And I want to mention as well that Greg Paulus just landed a job today. It was announced he's a new assistant coach at George Washington. George Washington last year in the Atlantic 10 finished 11th. They went 15-18. They were in the 200s in KenPom. But they do return 10 players. They lost one of their assistant coaches. And Greg now has a full-time job. And when you really think back to all the upheaval that we've seen in like the last year and a half, I have as much empathy for Greg Paulus as I do for anybody that was affected by Thad being fired. When you think about when a coaching staff gets let go in June, I mean, coaching, all the other staffs around the country are essentially set, except for the few that then are going to have to juggle to fill the opening that you just created. So Greg Paulus and the others find themselves out of jobs as in early June, and not many opportunities out there. And so Dave Dickerson took some time away to be with his family. His wife is battling an illness. And Chris Gent found a job in the NBA. But Greg Paulus, there wasn't a lot out there. There weren't many opportunities for him, period. So he ends up finding a job at Louisville last year under David Padgett as an interim coach. And you knew that was not a permanent situation for him. So, that coaching staff gets let go at the end of the season. And then Greg is out of a job again, and it's been you see him on, if you follow him on social media, he's been active going to different camps and different workouts and just kind of keeping himself out there as best he can. But you had sort of felt like, again, you know, here we are in mid-June and he didn't have a job, so kind of wondering what might come next. And now has a job as a full-time assistant at George Washington. Might be interesting if they go to Dayton this year, then he would be back in the Buckeye State. He is a Medina. He was born in Medina, so he does have some ties to the area. So just something to keep an eye on, but glad to hear that he found a job. Before we get out of here, I want to say thanks again to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With two hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit ColumbusSprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. I don't have any super new music recommendations to throw out there. I'm still listening a lot to the new Church's album. I really like it. Going back and revisited Frank Turner's album, Be More Kind. Still enjoying that. It's got some interesting moments, but I am very proud to say that if you are attending the Frank Turner concert at the House of Blues in Cleveland later this month, my brother called me today to inform me that he went to the box office and purchased what turned out to be the final two tickets before that show sold out. So I've never seen Frank. I'm unbelievably excited to see him. So that'll be sometime later this month. I can't remember the date exactly, but it's a Sunday night, I think, 24th. Something like that. But if you're going to be there, say hi. I'm very much looking forward to that. So, as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thanks to Patrick back at the studio for trying to make this sound as delightful as possible. And until next time, thanks, everyone.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.